Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Questions from the Audio Road. I'm your host, Kevin Rutherford, and I'll be taking your calls and answering your questions for the next hour or so. Lisa is here with us, screening calls and keeping things light and fun. If you want to join in, simply press 1 on your phone, and Lisa will be right with you. This is the show that puts the money where it belongs, back in your pocket. Sit back. Welcome to Questions from the Audio Road. I'm your host, Kevin Rutherford, and I'll be taking your calls and answering your questions for the next hour or so. Lisa is here with us, screening calls and keeping things light and fun. If you want to join in, simply press 1 on your phone, and Lisa will be right with you. This is the show that puts the money where it belongs, back in your pocket. Sit back, relax, and listen, or jump in and ask your question. You can even bring us your opinion. It's up to you. This is your show. You can ask questions about fuel mileage, tires, engine, EGR, aerodynamics, truck specking, maintenance, taxes, financial planning, getting started as an owner-operator, or anything else about the business of trucking. Here we go. Let's head on down the audio road.
Hi, this is Lisa. Remember to talk to Kevin. Press 1 so I can pick up the phone and screen your call. You know you'd rather talk to me anyway. Or just sit back, relax, and listen to the show. And at any time you have a question, just hit 1 and I'll pick up the phone.
Welcome to Questions from the Audio Road. I'm your host, Kevin Rutherford. Welcome to Questions. Welcome to Questions from the Audio Road. I'm your host, Kevin Rutherford.
Hello, everyone. This is Lisa. Hopefully you can hear me. We're trying to get Kevin's audio fixed. Yes, we are experiencing some technical difficulties tonight. We're avidly working on them, so we'll be with you shortly.
All right, everybody. I'm here now. I'm a little late to the party. We were hoping to add a second system in so we could do unlimited calls tonight, and
the audio engineer screwed up, so I think I'm going to fire him. Except, unfortunately, that would be me. So I'll have to work on that again. But we're here. We're live right now. We are going to start doing a recorded show for Sirius and XM. If you're listening online, we do still have lines open. I know we had a lot of people that dialed into the second number tonight, so we've got lines open here. If you're listening online and you want to join us on the live call, 347-884-8327. If you are on this call, we are doing open phone lines, questions and answers, anything you want to talk about. So press 1 and line up those calls right now, and we're going to get started here. So get your calls lined up early. We tend to run out of time when we're doing the recorded hour with open phone lines. So if you're on the call, press 1, and we are going to start getting to those right now. I'm going to do the show intro, and then we're getting right to it. So hold on. Good evening, and welcome to the show. I'm Kevin Rutherford, and this is the show that puts the money where it belongs, back in your pocket. I'm here tonight and every night to improve your bottom line and make you more successful. We talk about the things that are important to you, your business, your money, your life, and your success. Thanks for joining me, allowing me to ride along with you for an hour tonight. I consider it my mission on this show to bring you the very latest information to help you be more successful, make more money, save more money, and avoid scams and ripoffs. We can talk about trucks, money, retirement accounts, fuel mileage, maintenance, health insurance, technology, taxes, financial planning, current events, politics, or anything else you'd like to bring to the show. The website is letstruck.com. The important stuff, well, that's your phone call, so we're going to get right to it. And we are going to head off to Texas. Hugh, welcome to the program.
Thanks, Kevin. Good evening.
Good evening. You probably need to hear
landline now tonight, because you've probably been working on these technical things all day. But they were talking about the election and the consequences of the election and the impact of those consequences on the trucking industry. I didn't listen to the whole show. I listened to probably 10 or 15 minutes of it. And, I have a lot of disagreements with the OIDA, but, man, it's one thing I really admire about them is the way they stretch a dollar. It's amazing what all they do with about $45 a year for membership nowadays. They sponsor race cars. They got that radio show, and just an unlimited number of people on that radio show. Every day I listen, I hear different people in Washington, D.C., people there at the home office. And anyway, I don't even know who this girl was that he was interviewing about the I don't even know who he is, but and she was talking about one particular senator that they were really glad to see get elected or reelected because he's a real friend of the trucking industry and everything. And, one of the big things that OIDA is really interested in Jim Johnson has a real passion for is this idea of detention pay. A driver should get paid for his time. And I'm sitting here thinking, the world's going to hell in a handbasket. You know, the country's broke. They keep telling us that we're having to borrow more money, and they're constantly spending more money. And for some reason, and I realize it's their job to be an advocate for the trucking industry, but I mean, we got hours of service regulations and rules, being revamped. We've got this CSA 2010 that's wreaking havoc on everybody, and different states applying different standards to enforcement and just screwing everything up. And they think that Congress should take some time to try to pass some sort of law to make sure that truck drivers get detention pay. Is it just me, or is that just like, you know, beam me up, Scotty time?
Well, it's kind of crazy. First of all, somebody tell me what that's going to look like in the real world. You know, it's wonderful to play to that audience, because everybody listening in the trucking industry that has to sit at a dock is all over that. Sounds fantastic. Of course we should get paid for our time. Of course we should get paid when we have to sit there.
But so what does that have to do with the federal government and Congress?
Exactly. And how does it work in the real world? Are we asking for some sort of regulation to make this happen?
That's all I can figure. They were talking about it in conjunction with the election. I could only stand so much of it, and I changed the channel. But they're wanting is some sort of regulation to require shippers or brokers or somebody to have to pay truckers for detention time. Absolutely. They should get paid for it. But, I mean, is there not a trucker out there that knows how to negotiate a contract? Why does the federal government have to get involved in that?
Well, and let's say that we've tried to negotiate it and we can't for some reason. Well, why not? Because the market sets rates, the market sets prices, the market sets wages, and it works. And if for some reason we're not able to negotiate that, there's a reason for that. And you can't regulate it. It's not going to work. It's just going to make a mess of everything. I don't even know why we're trying. Aren't there so many better things we could be working on? Hey, speaking of which, and I know I've brought this up many times before, and I can't ever seem to get a response on it. Why isn't somebody other, ATA is doing it, and I know many drivers, they don't feel like the ATA is fighting for them. But I'm a little upset that a quasi-government organization, the Port Authority, is banning independent contractors from their entire operation. Why aren't we fighting that one harder?
I don't know. That sounds like that'd be a great job for OOIDA, don't you think?
I thought from day one they should be in there, and I keep trying to find somewhere where I can at least get their stance on that issue, and I can't find it anywhere. ATA's been all over court. I mean, they've lost, they appeal it, they lose, they appeal it. They're not dropping this one. I think this is a huge fight to get out there and say, wait a minute, you can't ban independent contractors from here. That's crazy. Almost 90% of the freight that is moved within those ports is moved by independent contractors.
You know, California is largely a Democratic state, lots of liberals out there, and you know, they're for the little guy.
Well, yeah, of course. So it's the union that's out there fighting this. The union wants to ban the independent contractors. That's who's behind this, the California unions. And if they've succeeded, they won. Now, the ATA is fighting it and appealing it, but the unions won on this. No more independent contractors. Now it'll be all company employee drivers in there, and then the unions come in and organize them. I guess that's what's good for the little guy, right?
Sure.
Yeah, big companies and unions, and now we'll fight it out for now till eternity, till the unions put the big companies out of business because they'll just demand more and more. And in the meantime, the real little guy, the entrepreneur, the independent contractor, he's just gone. You're not allowed in here anymore. Sorry. You've been servicing this port. Yeah.
The independents have been put out of business by this type of, you know, one-sided regulation. Or the real entrepreneurs among us will have gone on and found something else to do. And so when the unions succeed in putting their companies out of business, who's left to take care of the ports?
Yeah.
Okay.
And why is it that, okay, right now, obviously, the ports are operating without any regulation that says who can and can't move the freight in there. So without any regulation in place, 90% of the freight gets moved by independent contractors. Why is that? Maybe they're doing a better job. Maybe they're more efficient. Maybe they can offer a better price. But for some reason, with a free market in place, now nobody has said that big companies can't come in and use company drivers. There's no regulation stopping them. It's somewhat a free market. It's competitive. And with that competitive free market in place, 90% of the freight's being moved by independent contractors. Now we need to regulate against them completely and throw them away? Why is it anybody, I can't even get anybody to talk about it. I brought it up on my show, I bet, a half a dozen times in the last year, and I get, like, zero calls.
Well, those folks regulating the ports in California, I'm just going out on a limb here. They may not be listening to your show.
Yeah, I guess they're not. And I kind of get it. It doesn't affect us. You know, the people running in the ports, those are the people that want to be home every day. They probably don't listen to satellite radio. They're busting their butt 10, 12, 14 hours a day working hard and going home at night. So they're not listening to my show. But I just think that us as independent contractors, and I think a big majority of the people who listen to my show are independent contractors, don't we look at that and get a little bit worried?
We ought to be worried about it because, you know, maybe it doesn't affect us. This particular thing doesn't affect us now, but if they get away with, you know, regulating in this matter, I mean, the area in which we do regulate, we do operate, may be next.
That's what I'm trying to wake people up to is wait a minute, it may not be us this time, but that's us as a group. It's independent contractors they're banning. What next? What about military bases? Are we going to ban independent contractors from military bases? Other ports? I mean, where does it end? I just think we need to be a little more concerned about this. I'm kind of concerned. I've got to get to a break. Stick around. We'll be right back. You're on the Road Dog, Sirius 147, XM 171. I'm Kevin Rutherford. Good evening. Welcome back. I'm Kevin Rutherford. This is Trucking Business and Beyond. The website is letstruck.com. We're going to get right back to the phone calls. Let's go to Illinois. Jeff, welcome to the program.
Why, hello there, Kevin. This is Jeff Zarley.
Jeff, how are you doing?
I am absolutely fantastic. Life is very good.
Is that right? Well, I love to hear that.
Yeah, Well, I haven't talked to you nor Lisa in a while, but last time I talked to you is that I was a Caterpillar mechanic, part-time owner-operator, hauling a bull rack. And
correct.
This last year, the wife and I decided one or the other, you know, we can't do both anymore, no matter how much
okay.
money I wanted to make. So I quit my job at Caterpillar, and I am running my $15,000 Freightliner, hauling the bull rack. We have a 30-day running average of 6.74 miles per gallon.
Outstanding, and congratulations. Hey, you know, I'm really excited, and in some ways I'm just a little sad because you were, I just from talking to you and the things you've called in and helped us with, you were one of those really outstanding mechanics. And, you know, the mechanical side of things just lost a great mechanic, but I'm excited we've got you on the owner-operator side now.
Yeah, I mean, I could use my talents in this field, too. I'm more
That's
motivated
right.
in trucking, and I spent all summer long, my truck sat, and I had to change the bowl gear on the front of my Detroit. I installed the Pittsburgh Power Dampener Balancer, changed the radiator, installed the Fleet Air Filter, which is fantastic, by the way, and two Pittsburgh Power Mufflers behind my sleeper. And my personal goal, because I know we always talk about goals, right?
That's right.
I'm going to call you by next Thanksgiving, and I'm going to have this thing over 7 miles per gallon pulling a loaded bull rack as a 30-day running average. I promise you that.
Outstanding. I'd love to see that, because then I can tell all the other bull haulers who call me all the time and go, oh, but you can't ever do that with a bull hauler. Then I'll be able to say, oh, no, wait a minute. We've got somebody who's done it.
Well, I'm doing 58 miles an hour right now, and I just unloaded 187 pigs, and none of them died. So I don't see the problem there, but I just wanted to thank you very much. And, I hope I'm definitely going to get to the CMC again next year, and hopefully at the maintenance boot camp if my scheduling makes it. And just wanted to thank you both and wish you the best for this year.
Hey, well, I appreciate it. And, if we can get you to the maintenance boot camp, I'd like to have you there as our guest, and I'd really like to have you on our side there, because with your talents and your background and your experience, we're still kind of laying out what it's going to be and what it's going to look like, but I'd love to have you there as an instructor.
Well, it would be an honor, and I'd be glad to. I'd be glad to provide my truck. As far as, I can give you a list of things that, I can do or check or install and help people with. I'd be glad to do that, Kevin.
Fantastic. We'd love to have you there for that. So we'll talk about that as we get closer to it.
Sounds good, sir.
Fantastic. Thanks for the call, and congratulations. That's a big step. But I hear the enthusiasm there, and I absolutely love that. You are going to be wildly successful at this, I can tell. Let's go to Texarkana. JR, welcome to the program. What side of the state line are you on?
I'm in Arkansas.
Arkansas. What's up tonight?
I've got a question concerning blighter kits and how they're actually registered. It's registered on the vehicle itself or on the engine. So if you go through an emissions test, they ask you what the year model of the truck is, and then you tell them it's an 011. They want to try to mesh you against 011 standards. They say, well, wait, the truck is an 011, but the engine is a 2000 or 2002 pre-EGR. So how does that actually pan out when going through an inspection like that, plus whenever you're ready to register it?
Yeah, it's an interesting thing the way this works. The truck is titled as a 2011. So if we have a carrier, let's say, that requires a five-year-old or newer truck, we pass with flying colors because it's a 2011. The VIN number indicates that it was built as a glider kit, and the glider kit, when we built them, they're registered with that specific engine. And as far as emissions go, we're registered with the year of the engine that we put in it. So it's pretty interesting. We actually get the best of both worlds. We get to register the truck as a 2011 for emissions. Whatever engine we put in that when we built it is what we registered as the engine. And those are the emission requirements that we have to meet. So if we put a 2000, a 2001 DDEC 4, then that's our emission standards that we have to meet.
Okay, that's understandable. When buying a glider kit, are you buying it as a new vehicle and having to pay full FET on it, or is it classified as something else and might get away with not paying FET?
Another interesting question, and as of right now, the glider kits, all the glider kits that are sold from Fitzgerald's are no FET. Now, it's the IRS, and over the years, there's a couple ways you can beat the FET. And it's the IRS, so it's always complicated. One is that we keep the value and the price of the glider kit, 75% or less of a comparable new truck. So if we took a comparably spec'd 2011 Coronado truck, not a glider kit, whatever the price is on that truck, we need to be able to sell the glider kit at 75% or less of that price. And as long as we do, then we can avoid the FET. Now, it gets a little screwy about, you know, what the actual price would be because of options. And so, again, it's the IRS, but so far they're all sold without FET. The other way comes down to the major components. If they consider, if you have two of the three major components, is another way that the FET works. If the IRS ever stepped in and said, wait a minute, you're not meeting the requirements, we're going to make you pay the FET, you would only pay the FET on the glider kit itself, not the price of the finished product. So as of right now, no FET, and it's been that way for years. But, you know, the IRS has audited a couple times, and, you know, we never know. We keep an eye on it. But we also know that if they ever came in and said, wait a minute, we're going to impose the FET, it would only be on the base price of the glider, not the finished truck.
That's awesome. Saves lots of money.
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely. And you know, the other great thing, we just had a husband and wife team that have been to the CMC, great people. And they bought an 05 Freightliner and 05 new, and it was EGR, had nothing but problems with it. Got so fed up with it, bought an 08 Volvo in 08, and after 200 and some thousand miles, lost the motor, ISX. Nothing but problems with the EGR system, wiped out the cams on it, finally called me and said, look, we really want to build a glider kit. So we built one for them earlier this year, and they were in here today, and they are absolutely in love with this truck. Excellent fuel economy. They're heading this way. They're fairly light, you know, coming this way from Oregon this time. But they were running up against 9 miles to the gallon most of the way here with 15,000 pounds. And that's with a spread axle, curtain side, flatbed. And their fuel economy's way up, maintenance cost, virtually nothing. The truck just runs, and they're really happy with it. So there are a ton of advantages to gliders.
Yeah, I'm looking. Mine is 4 years old, and it's got 630,000 miles on it, and it's an 07, but it's got an 06 ISX in it, which I haven't had a whole lot of problems with, but, you know, I'm on the fence as to whether I want to get another one or not, and so I was trying to weigh out the expenses. Right now, my fuel mileage over the past 4 years has been at 6.5 miles per gallon, you know, plus or minus a few tenths here and there, but fairly steady at 6.5 miles per gallon,
right,
over the life of the truck.
Right.
So, and you know, that includes the idle time as well, which with no APU on here, my idle time is below 19%.
Wow.
So,
yeah. You're pretty disciplined with that then.
Yeah, which makes it hard for me to justify the expense of an APU, even though I'd like to have one.
Yeah, you're right. That's really what it comes down to. These decisions are about cost, and, you know, I've got to get to a break. I'll have more to say about that when I come back. Stick around. We'll be right back. You're on the Road Dog, Sirius 147, XM 171. I'm Kevin Rutherford. Good evening. Welcome back. I'm Kevin Rutherford. This is Trucking Business and Beyond. Before we went to the break, we were talking about glider kits. And every time I talk about them, I get emails and calls saying, what's a glider kit? We kind of hinted about what it is there. A glider kit is a brand new truck with no drivetrain in it. And then we build a pre-emission drivetrain. We like to use DDEC 4 and DDEC 3 Detroits. Totally remanned inside and out, just like a new engine, better than today's new engines. Good fuel economy, great maintenance cost, no problems compared to, you know, most of the engines we're running today. Very simple, much easier to work on. But the glider kit really isn't for everybody. I mean, you hear me talk to people all the time, and I push them towards those $12,000, $15,000, $20,000 trucks. Those trucks are really hard to beat when it comes to just pure bottom line profit. No question about it. The glider kit is really for somebody who is in market for a brand new truck. Then they start to make a lot of sense. Typical truck today with all the new upcharges, $130,000. Glider kit, basic glider, and when I say basic, we're talking about a Coronado that's got all the upgrades in the cab, full gauge packages, you know, a lot of upgrades on the interior, long wheelbase, those kind of things. The base glider is about 107. Now, we are building what we call the signature truck glider kits, which means it comes with virtually everything we talk about here on the show, all the fuel mileage improvements, all the Pittsburgh power enhancements, all the upgrades and products and OPS Echo Pure and wide singles, all low rolling resistance. Well, we do all those things. I was just working with two people this week with an APU, with the Bose Ride system. We were at about 130. And, boy, I'll tell you what a fantastic truck it was when you look at all the options and everything you were going to get for 130. And I'm pretty excited because we just finished ours, the one we're driving around pulling our studio with, and that one is for sale. So I'll let you know more about where it's going to be, and if somebody wants to see it, you can come out and meet us, and we'll show it to you. But we're pretty excited, and it is a beautiful truck to be driving, I'll tell you. Let's go to Indiana. Rick, welcome to the program.
Mr. Rutherford.
Hello there. What's on your mind today?
I spoke to you and Bruce last week about the W9 that I redid the exhaust on it.
Yes.
Ran last week was my first week with it. Did my regular. I normally do 60 miles an hour around 1,300 RPM. I lost about a mile to the gallon. My best tank last week was 5.9. I'm normally between 6.7. My best tank was around 7.4. This week I came out and I cranked it up a little bit, and I've been running 65 with 1,400 on the RPMs. And the fuel mileage jumped up. One tank was 655, and my last tank I just checked a couple hours ago was 667.
Okay.
What's going on here?
When this truck was in the shop, when whatever work was being accomplished, was anybody in? Did the turbo come off? Did any of the turbo connections come apart? Was anybody in at the engine itself?
No, sir. I actually did all the work myself, so I definitely know none of that stuff was pulled apart.
Here's the first thing. There's a couple things we have to look at here. Even if this was just a pure issue of back pressure causing this loss in fuel economy, that doesn't even make sense, because we can measure the amount of fuel economy related to back pressure in one direction or the other, and there isn't, I mean, back pressure couldn't cause this change. It's too big of a change. So something else has to be going on. One of the first things that comes to my mind when we get our RPMs and our speed up and our fuel economy comes up, which is the exact opposite of what happens when, you know, it's all physics. When it happens, the reason is 9 times out of 10, we have a leak somewhere between the turbo and the intake. The turbo boots, the charger cooler, the intake manifold, somewhere we've got a breach in that system. And what happens then is the higher RPM, we're able to kind of overcome the leak. So that's the first thing I think of, is we need to maybe just for a little bit separate the two and see if possibly it was just pure coincidence that it happened at the same time. Let's verify that the entire intake system, charger, cooler, and everything is intact and we have no leaks. If there are no leaks, the only other thing that comes to mind is that somehow, and I would have to dig deeper and maybe even talk to the engineers on this one, is that somehow the back pressure or the drop in back pressure has affected the ECM somehow.
Okay. Now, let me ask you a question, Kevin. If I'm running around with extremely underinflated tires on my trailer, how much of a loss in fuel economy would you expect from 8 tires underinflated?
It really comes down to how much underinflated. It's about 2% on the trailer. When we're talking about the trailer, it's about 2% for every 10 pounds we're underinflated. So not huge numbers. I mean, even at 30 pounds underinflated, which is really bad, you've lost about 6% in fuel economy.
So that wouldn't really account for a mile to the gallon drop, right? Okay.
No.
Okay.
In fact, there are so few things that can account for a full mile per gallon. And that's what's really got me baffled here. You know, even if we go back to my first thought that we have a leak somewhere in the charger, cooler, the intake system, even if we blew out the charger, cooler, and it wouldn't hold any pressure, we would probably only lose about a half mile per gallon.
Okay. I figured I'm going to try again next week. I think I'm going to cut it back to 1,300 and start running it how I was originally running it and see what it does. But last week I was doing it like that. I got 5.9 on one tank. This week I tightened it up a little bit and it shot up, and I'm kind of like lost right now.
Yeah, this is really confusing because, again, when I talk about fuel economy, everything comes down to physics. There are 4 ways to either improve or hurt fuel economy. And if one of these 4 things doesn't happen, then fuel economy doesn't change. It's the thermal efficiency of the engine, aerodynamic drag, rolling resistance, or mechanical resistance through the driveline. I mean, that's it. So when we look at the physics of what you changed, we decreased the back pressure in the engine. The physics say the engine should run easier. Fuel economy goes up, and we see it day after day after day. So when it goes down, you know, we have to kind of step back, scratch our heads, and go, what's going on here? And again, the only thing I can think of that I don't understand, I'd have to work more on, is there somehow was the ECM negatively affected by that drop in back pressure.
Okay. All right, I guess I'll run it next week at 1,300 and see what it does, and I'll check back in with you.
Yeah, definitely check in with me. Call Pittsburgh Power, work with them, let them see, you know, if they've got some numbers to work with, they may be able to figure out something, and we'll just stay on top of this till we get it.
Yeah, I really appreciate your patience, sir.
All right. Thanks for the call, and I will look forward to hearing back from you on that. And like I say, we are going to stay on top of that. We got a bunch of new things we are working on here. You know, we really haven't introduced many new products this year. Evans Coolant was one of the things I'm excited about. But all of a sudden, I've got several things that I'm really excited about. I was looking and looking and looking, and I wasn't coming up with any technology I was really excited about. And now We've got an all-electric APU that we'll be talking about more as I do more research on it. A new trailer aerodynamic package, very different from what everybody else is doing. It's not side skirts, not bow tails, something much simpler and replaces both of those things. And we're working pretty closely with that company right now, and I'm excited about that as well. So we've got a lot of stuff going on, and I'll keep you informed. Stick around. We'll be right back here on the Road Dog, Sirius 147, XM 171. I'm Kevin Rutherford. Good evening. Welcome back. I'm Kevin Rutherford. This is Trucking Business and Beyond. We're going to get right back to the phone calls. Let's go to Mike in Virginia. Mike, welcome to the program.
Hey, Kevin. How are you doing today?
Doing good. What can I help you with?
I'm the guy. I met you a few weeks ago at Truck City Service. I had that old 3 Volvo.
We
did the oil samples on the rear ends and everything. I'm having a crazy vibration that I've been getting pretty much since I got the truck. I thought it was tires, so I replaced all the tires, and I've kind of been doing a process of elimination, trying to figure out what this vibration is. And you know what? I'm just stumped. I had the driveline checked. It had tires on it. The alignment went through. I mean, I had the wheels balanced on the hull, you know, on the truck, and the truck shakes so hard. It's normally a team, and I can't even run with a team driver because it's shaking too hard to sleep in while it's moving.
Wow. When does it occur? Is it at certain speeds? Give me some idea of when it's happening.
Here's the odd thing. It does not do it when I'm bobtailing. It's only when I have a trailer on. And it's considerably worse if I'm empty. If I'm loaded, it almost goes away. It's very minimal when I'm loaded. The heavier I am, the better.
It does it when you're bobtailing, and then
it does not do it when I'm bobtailing. It does not vibrate when I'm bobtailing.
Doesn't do it when you're bobtailing. But then if you put an empty trailer on it, it does it. But then the more weight you put in the trailer, the more it goes away.
Yeah, and I've checked the ride height. I've called the dealers, I've gone through all of this, and I cannot figure out anything and why it's doing that. I'm stumped.
And when you say a vibration, it's more of a vibration than a bounce, or is it a bounce or a shake?
It's a shake where, like, things are coming off the shelves in the truck.
Okay,
it's
so not really
shake.
A vibration, more of a...
Yeah.
And the reason I ask that is because a vibration... and really, when it comes right down to it, they're all the same. They're happening basically at different frequencies. A vibration is very short and fast, and a bounce is slower and more extreme. But when we feel it like the way we would describe a vibration, that tends to be more along the lines of internal components. You know, possibly something internally in the transmission or in one of the differentials, in yokes or things like that. When it feels more like a bounce, then it tends to be some sort of spinning component out of balance. So if it feels more like a bounce, now when you say they balanced the tires on the truck, how did they do it?
I didn't watch them do it at the alignment shop, but The alignment guy I definitely trust. I've had him do all my trucks, and he's done a very excellent job. Never had a problem.
Okay.
But I know he spun balanced them on the truck. So that way everything was balanced then, you know what I mean, all the hub and everything got balanced
right
together.
Yeah, and that's kind of what I was wondering, because I'm wondering if we could have a brake drum out of round, an assembly mounted off-center.
Let me throw one more little hiccup in it here for you. I forgot to mention, it is not constant. It is very it's on and off. You know, it'll do it and then it won't do it for a little bit, and then you know, it's very intermittent.
Oh yeah, that now you've made things even more difficult.
I can't figure this out.
Wow. Now, when you say they checked the drive line, did they check drive line angles?
I took it to the Peterbilt dealer in Florida, where I was stuck for a couple of days, and they went through, they road tested it, they checked U-joints, drive shafts, drive angles, pulled some oil out of the rear end just to see if there's metal in it, kind of went through their whole spiel, and they said they couldn't figure anything wrong with it. I actually, at a tire shop that I parked my truck at, we actually jacked the truck up off the ground, pulled all the tires off of it, spun everything to see if, you know, we could, if it was noticeable. It just, nothing jumps out at you. You know, there was a few tires that we thought were real bad, and so we just replaced the tires and it's still
right. Have you know who I would love to get working on this problem would be Mike Beckett.
Because M&D alignment or whatever?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. And, you know, Mike himself, we use MD alignments equipment techniques here at Truck City Service, but there's a big difference between using his equipment and using his techniques and being Mike. You know, Mike's the guy with 30 years of diagnosing this kind of stuff, and there's nobody else like him when it comes to solving the tough ones. You know, I've got to go through the things that I've had experience with and we know work, but then that odd one, you know, like this, the really tough one, I would like to run this one by Mike or have you call him directly.
Okay.
Let me give you a phone number.
Okay.
Do you have something to write with?
Yep.
It's 800-617.
Yep.
5592. And tell them that you and I talked about this. Whoever answers the phone, tell them you and I talked about this on the air. We really can't come up with a solution. We'd really like to get Mike involved on this and see what he can come up with. Because, again, because it's more of a bounce than a vibration, I'm leaning towards something in the tires, axles, brake drums, something out of balance, out of round, and that's really where he's really good at diagnosing things. So give him a call, and let's see what he comes up with, and I'm going to follow up with him on this one as well because I'd like to figure that out. Let's go to Arizona. Ed, welcome to the program.
Hey, Kevin, good evening. Fairtex now.
Yeah, let's get it done. Hey, real quick before I get to your, I know I've got another call on hold that I'm not going to get to, and it's Judd in Maine. He wanted to know what happened to Prop 23 in California, and unfortunately it's bad news. It failed. So that's really, that's all there is to say about that. So go ahead.
Yeah, I was going to a great conference call last night they had. It was really, really interesting to get points of view from the other side there. And
Definitely.
My biggest thing was that he kept saying that, you know, he's okay with paying his fair share, that, you know, the system works good for him, and, you know, that's great. You know, George Bush said, back, I think it was back in 06, the State of the Union, you know, if you think everything's all right and you think that you're not, or that you think the taxes are too low, the IRS accepts checks and money orders. You know, you can pay whatever you want.
They've always told us it's a voluntary tax system.
Right, but then they come after you and threaten to take it out of your account if you don't pay.
Right. So since it's voluntary, just volunteer to pay some more.
Right. Well, and you know, when he kept saying about how, you know, we can't simplify the current system, then how you expect us to change into a fair tax system, the best thing about the fair tax system is you don't have to change anything. You just stop doing the IRS system, and you let the states keep collecting sales tax like they've always been doing for 50 years.
Absolutely. Yeah, the collection mechanism is already in place. It's
right.
Simple. It's 133 pages. That's the beauty of it. So, and you know, here's the thing, and I'm really big on simple. You know, when we program software, I want it to be simple. When I explain fuel tax to people, I want it to be simple. Because that's the only way things work for me. When they get too complicated, I don't understand them. Here's what I found, though. The reason things get so complicated, it's easier to complicate something than it is to simplify it. It takes real hard work, dedication, and you have to keep tweaking and tweaking to make something that is complicated, to make it simple, is the real challenge. It's easy to keep complicating it. Just every time you have a problem, just write a new regulation. Now, it doesn't solve anything, but it just keeps making things more and more complicated. Now, to take a complicated system and simplify it, that's what takes real brilliance, real hard work, real dedication, and that's what's happened with the fair tax. $20-plus million dollars in over a decade of working on it to make it simple.
Right, and just like we've talked about before, and politicians do it all the time, it's easy to give a certain group a grant of money, or easy to give a certain state a lump of money. It's really hard for a politician to do nothing, to simplify things.
Well, yeah, absolutely. And if they do nothing, then, you know, what are they there for? Maybe,
right.
You know, Congress should be a part-time job.
Yeah, well, just like the state of Texas, we meet for 3 months every 2 years.
There you go. I love it. Hey, I wish I had more time, but I've got to get out of here. Stick around. Jonesy's coming up next with the all-night truck stop. You're on the road, dog. Sirius 147 XM 171. Remember, be safe, be profitable, be responsible, and master the journey. Good night, everyone. I'm Kevin Rutherford.